Om sahana vavatu, sahanao bhunaktu, sahavidyan karavavahai, tejasvinavadhitamastu mavidvishavahai. Om shanti shanti shanti. Oh. Good. Welcome to you, welcome to our webcast of our Saturday morning class on Shankaracharya's Atma Bodha. Today will be our last class on this particular text. We have just three verses left, so we'll continue. We'll conclude in today's class, and at the end, I'll announce the next text that we'll be taking. I always read the comments that come, both in the chat and comments on the on YouTube. And I noticed there was some confusion about the word satta. You might remember I've used this expression to describe how Brahman gives existence and consciousness to everything. Brahman gives, in fact, Pujya Swami Dayananda loved the word isness. Isness and awareness. He would use those two particular words. And they're translations of the word satta and spurti. Spurti means consciousness, awareness, the appearance of something. And the word satta, it literally means isness. And the way it's derived is from the word sat, existence, with an affix ta, which means ness. So the word is S-A-T-T-A, and a long A, ah. So satta means existence, literally isness, and spurti, appearance, consciousness. Brahman is the source of both. Anyway, just to address a question I happen to see in the comments. Today, as we conclude the class, we talk about what is the purpose of Atma Bodha. And you can see in the last topic, the purpose is enlightenment. And what do we mean by enlightenment? Remember the joke I told children too many times, and that is enlightenment doesn't mean you glow in the dark. Enlightenment means gaining knowledge, and a particular kind of knowledge. If you remember in the very introduction to this class, we established how the root cause of human suffering is a particular kind of ignorance, a particular kind of ignorance that Pujya Swamiji called self-non-recognition. When you fail to recognize your true nature as pure consciousness, as Satchidananda Atma, independent of the body and mind, unaffected by anything and everything, limitless, vast, unborn, unchanging, full and complete, failing to recognize that truth, naturally you become identified with your body and mind. And when you get identified with your body and mind, you end up accepting the problems of the body as your problems, the problems of your mind as your problems. The problems of the body belong to the body. Problems of the mind belong to the mind. And no problems belong to your true nature as pure consciousness, Satchidananda. So therefore, to the purpose of Atma Bodha, self-knowledge, is to address that problem, that root problem of self non-recognition, ignorance of the self. Ignorance of Atma is removed through knowledge of Atma. Knowledge of Atma, of course, is Atma Buddha. So, with that, let us see the last few verses here. Repeat after me. Shravanadhibhiruddipta, jnanagniparitapitaha. Jnanagni paritapitaha, jiva sarva malan muktaha, Jiva Sarva Malan Muktaha Swarnavadyotate Swayam Swarnavadyotate Swayam. Start in the third line. It's where the subject of the sentence is. And the subject is Jivaha. Jiva, we've spent some time defining. Jiva is not body and mind. Jiva is not consciousness. Jiva, we gave a very precise definition. Jiva literally means living being. But in a Vedantic sense, jiva is the one who suffers and the one who needs the suffering to be removed. Who is the one that suffers? The one who suffers is consciousness plus identification with the body and mind. Consciousness alone doesn't suffer. Therefore, consciousness alone is not jiva. Similarly, body and mind, in the absence of consciousness, are just inert stuff. Therefore, they don't suffer. So we've defined before, a little tricky, jiva is a compound entity. Jiva includes consciousness. Jiva includes, as a minimum, sukshma sharira, subtle body, plus the ignorance that causes identification. A little complicated, but that's the truth of the word jiva. We went through it in some detail before. So that jiva, the one who suffers, becomes muktaha, end of the third line, with the help of this atma bodha, self-knowledge, the jiva becomes muktaha, freed. Freed from what? Sarva malan. Becomes freed from all. Mala literally means impurity. But here, it's used in a little technical sense. There are two kinds of mala, impurity, that cause suffering. There's a root cause, and then there's an effect. So mala, impurity, can be in the form of a cause. That mala can be in the form of effect. The root cause, of course, is ignorance, as we just described. That self non-recognition. The ignorance that partially covers atma. Remember our discussion long ago? Not completely covered. That ignorance which partially veils or obscures or covers your true nature is the root impurity, ignorance. And that is one kind of mala, is the cause. The other kind of mala is the effect. And that's all the causes of ignorance, as we said before, that self-recognition leads to all kinds of suffering. Therefore, all the suffering you experience is the effect. So the mala, impurity, is present as a cause and effect. The cause is ignorance, and the effect is suffering. So the jiva, with the help of these teachings, becomes muktaha, freed from sarva malan, or sarva malat. Becomes freed from all kinds of impurities, these two categories of impurities. The jiva becomes freed from ignorance and the effect of ignorance, which is suffering. You become free from ignorance and free from suffering. How? Second line, jnana agni paritapitaha. Paritapitaha. When the jiva is paritapita, literally heated, but heated in the sense of burnt in a fire. What kind of fire? Jnana agni. Agni, of course, is fire. Jnana agni, jnana agni. The fire of knowledge. A very common and wonderful metaphor we find in the Bhagavad Gita and many other scriptures. The knowledge which is Atma Bodha, is so often compared to a fire, jnana agni, because just as fire destroys wood, whatever it burns, fire destroys completely. In the same way, knowledge completely destroys ignorance. So this is where the metaphor comes. So the jiva becomes freed from ignorance and suffering. How? When the jiva is paritapitaha, cooked. I'm loosely interpreting this. Literally, it means heated, but you could say burnt. My translation is nice. You become engulfed. Perfect. Engulfed by jnanagni, the blazing fire of knowledge. Excellent. And where does that fire of knowledge come from? First line, shravanadi bihi uddiptaha. That fire of knowledge is uddipta. It is ignited. The fire of knowledge is ignited by what? What is the source of that knowledge that destroys self non-recognition? What is the source of atma-bodha? And Shankara says, shravana adi bihi. Shravana adi means etc. So etc. means there's something more than shravana. Shravana, you might remember, is one of the three main practices in Advaita Vedanta. What are those three practices? Shravana, manana, and nididhyasana. Shravana, we literally hearing the teachings, but hearing the teachings and using them to undergo a process of self-inquiry that culminates in the discovery of your true nature. That's accompanied by manana. Manana is a process of removing doubts and vagueness and confusion. And finally, nididhyasana, which we discussed at great length, Vedantic contemplation. I won't speak further about it. Shravanadi bihi, by shravana, manana, and nididhyasana, this jnanagni, this fire of knowledge that removes the root cause of suffering, that self-non-recognition, so that jnanagni, fire of knowledge, is uddipta, end of the first line. It is ignited by shravana, manana, nididhyasana. Very nicely said. Then, Shankara concludes here with quite a good metaphor. We've seen that metaphors are all different. Some of them are better than others, and we said very clearly, no metaphor is perfect. All metaphors have defects. This metaphor has relatively few defects. So this process of removing the root cause of suffering, self non-recognition, by being engulfed in the flames of self-knowledge, as Shankara compares it to, in the last line, swarnavat dyotate swayam. After the jiva is engulfed in flames, in fact, the jiva who is engulfed in flames, dyotate shines, swayam, it itself shines, swarnavat. Swarna, you might know, means gold. So the jiva, having been engulfed in this jnanagni, shines like gold. And of course, I'm mixing the metaphor quite intentionally. Here's the idea. Gold, none of us have, I don't think any of us have had the experience of smelting gold. You start with gold ore, and it goes into some kind of furnace. And in that furnace, the impurities in the ore are burnt away in that furnace, and in the end, gold alone remains. And gold, of course, is shining brightly. Look at the metaphor. If you have a lump of impure gold or gold ore, gold is already present. The act of smelting doesn't turn the ore into gold. The gold is already present, but the gold is obscured by these impurities. So the process of smelting gold ore only, merely, removes the impurities and reveals the gold that's always been there. You can see the aptness of this metaphor. As we've discussed many times in this class, your true nature has always been Satchidananda Atma. Your true nature has always been divine. Your consciousness has always been non-separate from Brahman, the reality because of which everything exists. All of those truths are eternal. So what is the purpose of Vedanta? Not to make you divine, not to make you limitless and eternal and full and complete, but rather to remove the impurities that obscure your true divine nature. You know how nice the metaphor is. As I've said before, Vedanta doesn't give you anything, figuratively speaking. Yes, it does, of course, in a relative sense. Of course it gives us, but the purpose of Vedanta is specifically to remove the impurity of ignorance and the results, the effects of that ignorance. So it's a process of subtraction. When you smelt gold, it's a process of subtraction. You're removing impurities, and in the same way, in Advaita Vedanta, when we pursue this Atma-Bodha self-knowledge, it's a process of subtraction. Atma-Bodha doesn't make you more than you are, because you already are that. Tat Tvamasi, you already are that, as we've discussed. So what Atma-Bodha does is remove that impurity of ignorance along with the effects of ignorance, which is suffering. All right, then.
Hridakashodito hyatma, hridakashodito hyatma, bodhabhanustamopahrata, bodhabhanustamopahrata, sarvavyapi sarvadhari, sarvavyapi sarvadhari, bhati bhasayate khilam, bhati bhasayate khilam. Hrit akasha uditaha hi Atma,
breaking the words apart. He, indeed, Atma, your true nature, Satchidananda Atma, pure consciousness. That pure consciousness is that compound, Hrit Akasha Udita. Udita means risen. And like the sun goes up and shines. So this is a metaphor. Just like the sun rises and shines in space, in the same way, Atma consciousness is udita. It is risen. Risen in hrit akasha, in the space of the heart. Nice metaphor. Just as the sun rises and shines in the sky, Atma shines in the space of the heart. Notice I paused, because Atma doesn't rise. In fact, even the sun, we've discussed before, yes, we see the sun rise, but we had a long discussion before, the sun constantly shines. Whether you see it shining or not is another thing. The sun is constantly shining. So that constantly shining light of awareness shines in Hrit Akasha, in the space of your heart. Whenever the word Hrit or Hridaya, heart, is used in our Vedantic texts, it always means mind or buddhi. So this consciousness shines in the space of your heart. Consciousness illumines your mind, as we've discussed. Whatever is happening in your mind, all your thoughts, emotions, whatever your five senses pick up, all of that in your mind is illumined by consciousness. And that consciousness is, in the second line, that consciousness, when it is as the Bodhabhanu, Shankara is enjoying this metaphor, comparing consciousness to the sun. Excuse me. In the first line, that consciousness is shining in the space of the heart. In the second line, he talks about Bodhabhanus. Bhanus, Bhanu is sun. The sun of Bodha, as an Atma Bodha. Bodha here meaning knowledge. By the way, my translation here is incorrect. It's not the light of consciousness. If you have my handouts, please cross off the word consciousness. The word is knowledge. And I'm going to show you a very important distinction here. So that Bodhabhanus, the sun of knowledge, is apahrit, the last word, is the remover. The sun of knowledge is apahrit, the remover of what? Tamas. Tamas apahrit becomes tamopahrit. Tamas, literally darkness, nice metaphor. Just like the sun removes darkness when it rises, here, Atma Bodha, the light of knowledge, removes tamas in a sense of the darkness of ignorance. Just as sun removes darkness, knowledge removes ignorance. Tamas, or darkness, so often represents ignorance. Now, on the surface, that's pretty obvious, but there's a subtle thing going on here. So in the first line, Shankara is talking about consciousness. In the second line, he's talking about the sun of knowledge that removes ignorance. And also, I mentioned that to translate it as light of consciousness is incorrect. Let me show you a very critical issue that we haven't discussed before, and that is this. Consciousness does not remove ignorance. Now, think about it. Consciousness doesn't remove ignorance. Consciousness reveals ignorance. How do you know whether or not you know the Chinese language? If there is ignorance in your mind about the Chinese language, you know you are ignorant of the Chinese language. How do you know you are ignorant of the Chinese language? Because of consciousness. Consciousness doesn't remove ignorance. Consciousness illumines ignorance. Then how do we remove ignorance? We say not that consciousness removes ignorance, knowledge removes ignorance. But now, this is what Shankara is bringing out here. What exactly is knowledge? Well, knowledge is in the form of a thought, vritti. Vritti is a mental event. So there is knowledge in the form of a thought. We call it jnana vritti. A vritti in the form of jnana, in the form of knowledge. That jnana vritti is that which can destroy ignorance. Now, if you remember way back, we had a discussion about what is a vritti, and we said it's like a wave in the ocean of consciousness, in the field of consciousness in your mind. Trying to remember the language we used, we said consciousness with a form which represents the object of the vritti. So you can have a vritti in the form of a pot. In fact, right now you do. In your mind, you have a vritti, which is consciousness with potness superimposed on it. This is actually a complicated topic. I don't want to go back through all of that again, but if you recall our discussion, vritti is consciousness plus namarupa. Just as pot is clay plus namarupa, in the same way a pot thought is consciousness plus the name and form pot. So vrittis, all vrittis, including right now you have a Swami Taratmananda vritti. What is a vritti? consciousness with name and form, consciousness with something else. So therefore, so then what is a jnana vritti? In fact, right now, seeing me is a jnana vritti. You have knowledge of Swami Tadatmananda. What is that jnana vritti? Consciousness in your mind, consciousness present in your mind with a Swami Tadatmananda form superimposed upon that consciousness. And I don't want to go back to this whole discussion, so allow me to avoid it. I want to stay on this topic here. Here's the point. Any vritti is made of consciousness. Just as pot is made of clay, every vritti, every thought, emotion, and sensation that takes place in your mind, the content is consciousness. The content of a pot is clay. The content of every vritti is consciousness. Now watch this. Right now you have a jnana vritti, a knowledge that a vritti that gives you knowledge of Swami Tadatmananda. The content of that Swami Tadatmananda vritti is consciousness. Take it one more step now. So we can now understand something clever Shankaracharya is saying here. He says, Bodha Bhanus, the sun of knowledge destroys ignorance, but the sun of knowledge, he says, is the same as Atma, consciousness. So it looks like Shankara is saying consciousness is the sun of knowledge that destroys ignorance. In fact, he's saying that, but we have to interpret it properly. He says, Atma, consciousness, is Bodha Bhanus, is the sun, is the light of knowledge, which is Tamas Apahrit, the remover of ignorance. And what that means is consciousness in the form of a jnana vritti removes the ignorance in the form of self non-recognition. Notice the subtle distinction I'm making. It's not consciousness itself that removes ignorance, as we established before. Consciousness doesn't remove ignorance, consciousness reveals ignorance. But that same consciousness that reveals ignorance, when that consciousness takes on a particular form, the form of a vritti, and not just any vritti, a vritti in the form of knowledge, jnana vritti, consciousness in the form of a jnana vritti removes ignorance. I'll say that again. Consciousness itself doesn't remove ignorance, but consciousness in the form of a jnana vritti removes ignorance. And this is such an important topic that there's a special name given for the jnana vritti that removes self non-recognition. So we want a particular kind of knowledge to remove a particular kind of ignorance. The ignorance we want to remove is the ignorance that veils, partially obscures Atma, self non-recognition. And the particular kind of jnana vritti that removes ignorance about Atma gets a special name, fancy name, big name, akhandakara vritti. A vritti which is akhanda akara. A vritti whose akara form is akhanda, limitless. A vritti whose form is limitless. And what that refers to is a vritti capable of making you discover your limitlessness. A vritti which allows you to recognize your limitlessness is the akhandakara vritti. This term is used in a lot of commentaries. You may have heard it before. You should know that term. So, in general, consciousness in the form of a jnana vritti removes ignorance. In particular, consciousness in the form of a khandakara vritti removes ignorance about your true nature. And it is that akhandakara vritti which results in enlightenment, the removal of ignorance and the gaining of enlightenment. Further, Shankara talks about that. So you see, I'm making a subtle but important distinction. Consciousness doesn't remove ignorance. Jnana vritti removes ignorance. And in particular, akhandakara vritti removes ignorance of Atma. So therefore, it's the akhandakara vritti that grants you enlightenment. Shankara continues to talk about that same consciousness, the consciousness which is hrit akasha uditaha, the consciousness which is shining in your mind, the consciousness which is bodha bhanus, the consciousness which is present as the content of the akhandakara vritti. That consciousness is sarva vyapi in the third line. That consciousness is all-pervasive. As we've said before, consciousness has no edge, no boundary, no limit. Therefore, it's all-pervasive. That consciousness is sarva-dhari. So it is the support or substratum of all, because that consciousness is the fabric of existence. The conscious fabric of existence. This is Brahman giving satta and spurti. Brahman gives satta and becomes sarvadhari, the support for all, the substratum of all. Brahman gives spurti, consciousness, and grants, and therefore Brahman is sarvavyapi, literally all-pervasive. And that reality, which is sarvadhari, the fundamental reality because of which everything exists, and which is sarvavyapi, the all-pervasive consciousness, it bhati, it shines, bhasayate akhilam, causing akhilam, everything, bhasayate to appear. Consciousness pervades the universe, causing everything to appear. All pervasive consciousness causes the stars to appear when you see them. You look at the stars, they appear to you. Why? All pervasive consciousness is present in your mind, in my mind, in the mind of every sentient being. So, with this verse, Shankara concludes his teachings and comes to the final verse of the text. It's not uncommon for the final verse of a text to be different. And this verse is different in several ways. One obvious way that the final verse is different is it has a longer meter. So let us see the verse, and you can hear the longer meter. Longer meter means there are more syllables per line. Listen and recite after me. Digdesha kala dhyana peksha sarvagam. Digdesha kala dhyana peksha sarvagam. Shitari hrinitya sukham niranjanam. Shitari hrinitya yasukam niranjanam yasvatmatirtam bhajate vinishkriyah yasvatmatirtam bhajate vinishkriyah sa sarvavit sarvagato mrito bhavet sa sarvavit sarvagato mrito bhavet. You can see the longer meter. So here, this verse talking about Atmabodha, the whole text, of course, is Atmabodha. And that Atmabodha is in the first end of the first line, Sarvagam. Sarvagam, all-pervasive. That all-pervasive consciousness revealed by Atma. This is the tricky thing Shankara said two verses ago. In the prior verse. Atmabodha is at two levels. One is Atmabodha is knowledge of Atma, but another level, Atmabodha is a vritti whose content is consciousness. Do you see the two meanings? At one level, Atmabodha means knowledge of Atma, means ultimately that jnana vritti, akhandakara vritti. Atmabodha, knowledge of Atma, is in the form of a vritti, that knowledge vritti that takes place and removes ignorance. That's one level of understanding the word Atmabodha. But just as the content of a pot is clay, the content of Atmabodha is consciousness, chit. The content of an akhandakara vritti, the content of every vritti, is consciousness. So Shankara is intentionally using that second meaning here, consciousness. Atmabodha, in the sense of the consciousness, which is the content of all vrittis, including a vritti which reveals the nature of Atma, Atmabodha, that consciousness is sarvagam, all-pervasive. All-pervasive in what way? It is dik, desha, kaladi, anapeksha. All-pervasive, anapeksha, irrespective of, all-pervasive, irrespective of dik, direction. So consciousness pervades in all directions. It is sarvagam, all-pervasive, anapeksha, irrespective of desha, location, place. So consciousness pervades this world, and consciousness pervades any other world that might exist. And consciousness pervades kaladi, kala, etc. Kala means time. So consciousness pervades irrespective of time. Consciousness pervades the past, present, future. So consciousness is all-pervasive with regard to dik, direction, desha, place, and kala, time. And that Atmabodha is shitadihrit. And here Shankara is having fun playing with both meanings of Atmabodha. He's doing this quite deliberately. So Atmabodha, as we said, at one level means the knowledge of Atma that removes suffering. At another level, Atmabodha, the content of that knowledge is consciousness. So now he's referring to the vritti, vritti-jnanam, knowledge in the form of vritti, that Atmabodha is Shitadi Hrit, Hrit, the remover of Shita, cold, Adi, etc. And cold here is used as a representative for all kinds of suffering. You're too cold, you're too hot, you're too hungry, you're too thirsty. All forms of suffering are represented here by the word Shitadi Hrit. So that Atmabodha as consciousness is all pervasive, first line. That Atmabodha as a vritti, these are the two meanings. Atmabodha as consciousness is all pervasive. Atmabodha as a vritti removes suffering. Atmabodha as consciousness is nitya sukham. It is Satchitananda. That ananda is nitya sukham, eternal happiness. Eternal happiness means the source of all contentment, joy, and peace. And that consciousness is niranjanam, literally untainted, better understood here as unaffected consciousness, remains utterly unaffected by all worldly troubles. Now here comes the very elegant part of this verse. Shankara says, Yaha bhajate. Before I give you the second half, let me explain his metaphor here. He is talking about, see the second line, Swatma Tirtam. Swa Atma Tirtam. Tirtam you might know as a holy place, a sacred place, like a sacred temple or the Ganga or Mount Kailasa or something like that. These sacred places are called Tirtha. A sacred place is a place you go to be blessed, and you know, pilgrims always are traveling to these sacred places, Tirthams, for a particular kind of blessing. The pilgrims want to be freed from all their sins. So freed, let me not use the word sin. How about freed from all impurities? Better expression here. So the pilgrim who goes to the Ganga bathes in the Ganga to be freed from all impurities. The pilgrim who goes to a special temple or to Mount Kailasa goes for the sake of being freed from all impurities. And Shankara is saying, I'll put words in his mouth if you permit me to, and that is, Shankara would ask, why would you need to go to the Ganga or Mount Kailasa to be purified of all your impurities when you can be purified of all your impurities? Remember, we started our class with that. Sarva Malan Muktaha, you become freed from all impurities by gaining Atma Bodha, by gaining this knowledge. So Shankara is not being sarcastic, but you can see a little thread of sarcasm. He might be saying, why bother going to bathe in a Ganga or to go to Mount Kailasa to be freed of all your impurities when you could simply stay in the comfort of your home or your ashram or sit in a cave and be blessed by Atma Bodha, self-knowledge, which will similarly remove all the impurities, the impurity of ignorance and the suffering, which is the effect of ignorance. So he is making this metaphor, this comparison, a comparison between going to a temple or a holy place to be freed from impurities. Instead of going to a temple, you could go within. And that's what Shankara is saying here. Yaha, one who bhajate, resorts to, one who resorts to Swatma Tirtham, a tirtha, a holy place of pilgrimage, which is your own true self, Swatma, Swatma. One who bhajate, worships at that place of pilgrimage, which is oneself, or one who resorts to that place of pilgrimage, which is oneself, that person who is vinishkriyaha. This word has several meanings, but the meaning that applies here very nicely is vinishkriya can mean to remove, to break, to accomplish something, but there's a special meaning, expiation. Vinishkriyaha is expiation. You know that word. It means to be freed from sins, to be freed from impurities. So yaha, one who, vinishkriyaha, becomes freed from all impurities. How? Because bhajate, because that person has resorted to Swatma Tirtham, not to the Ganga, not to Mount Kailasa, but by turning one's attention within to discover your true nature, of course, with the help of these teachings. Saha, that person, as a result of turning their attention within, as a result of an inner pilgrimage. This is a metaphor. As a result of an inner pilgrimage, which culminates in the discovery of your true nature, which culminates in gaining Atma-bodha, which culminates in removing that self-recognition, which is the source of all suffering, saha, that person, bhavet, end of the verse, becomes what? Sarvavit. Sarvavit, all-knowing. All-knowing, not in the sense that you know everything. All-knowing means you know Brahman. One who knows reality knows everything. By knowing clay, you know all pots made of clay. By knowing clay, you know all pots. By knowing Brahman, the fundamental reality because of which everything exists, by knowing Brahman, you know everything. You become sarvavit. You become sarvagataha, all-pervasive. By knowing your true nature as consciousness, you identify, you shift your identification away from the limited body and mind. You shift your identification towards consciousness, consciousness which is sarvagataha, and you become bhavet, you become amrutaha, immortal. Because you don't really become immortal. You've always been immortal. Consciousness was never born, therefore it's not subject to death. But you, previously, you may not have known that. Then you discover that truth about yourself, the truth that your consciousness is unborn, uncreated, and unchanging, therefore not subject to death or destruction. This is the blessing of one who bhajate, resorts to Swatmatirtham, that pilgrimage place which is inside yourself, the inner pilgrimage which makes you vinishkriyaha, freed from the impurity of ignorance and freed from suffering. This is the blessing of Atma-bodha, self-knowledge. And with that verse, we conclude our study of Atma-bodha. I have to say, I've really enjoyed this class a lot. And I've also enjoyed teaching all of you. You know very well, there's a camera in front of me, but somehow I don't see the camera. I see students. I've taught for a long time, and I just feel so connected with students. One reason I feel so connected with all of you is when I read your comments. I read the chat that comes on YouTube, and I read all the comments that come on YouTube. So I think through reading the comments, I feel even more connected. So anyway, that connectedness makes me enjoy this so much. I don't think anyone can enjoy teaching a camera, but definitely I enjoy teaching all of you. It's been wonderful for me. Let me say, as we conclude this class, we will start a new one. Our next text will be Advaita Makaranda. Makaranda is nectar, the nectar of non-duality, Advaita Makaranda, nectar of non-duality. It's a short text by one Lakshmidhara, is his name. And it's a very advanced text. In fact, it is 100% Nididhyasana. Remember, we had a section of about 10 verses or so in Atma-bodha that was just pure Nididhyasana. Here, the entire text is Nididhyasana. It's an advanced text. If you've made it this far through Atma-bodha, you're definitely well prepared for this text, Advaita Makaranda. And we have to change the timing of our class. Generally, we keep our Advaita Vedanta classes here at our ashram. We teach on Tuesday evenings. Generally, we keep Saturday mornings for Bhagavad Gita. Now, previously, we had taught Mahabharata on Saturday mornings. We just concluded the Mahabharata, and then we started this Atma Bodha. But now we want to return to Bhagavad Gita. So in the beginning of the new year, we're going to start a Saturday morning class on Bhagavad Gita. Please watch that class. Please join us for the Saturday morning Bhagavad Gita class. But because that class will be Saturday morning, this class, our Vedanta class, Advaita Vedanta class, will be on Tuesday evenings. Tuesday evenings at 7:30 p.m. That's our usual time here. For those of you in India, that's probably inconvenient, way too early in the morning. But you can watch the same. You can watch anytime you want. All of this is, as you know, recorded, available online. So please be ready for the. Please join us. And this class will start on January 5th. So next, we'll take a short break. We won't have any classes until the beginning of the new year. So with the beginning of the new year, we will start the Bhagavad Gita classes on Saturday mornings. With the beginning of the new year, we'll begin this Advaita Makaranda class on Tuesday evenings. Also, on New Year's Day, for many years, I've given a special message to all of our students on New Year's Day. We can't physically do it here at our ashram because of the pandemic. So I will give a New Year's Day message by a webcast on New Year's Day at 11 a.m. So it's a Friday. So New Year's Day, January 1st, Friday at 11 a.m. Please watch the webcast. It'll be a nice message to begin the new year. So, again, I've enjoyed this class very much. Thank you for joining us. Yeah, so Vasanti, my assistant, is reminding me that there's no class next Saturday at 11 a.m. This class will not meet. We finished the text, and we'll resume then with the Tuesday classes in the first of the year. Om Sarve Bhavantu Sukhinaha, Sarve Santu Niramayaha, Sarve Bhadrani Pashyantu, Ma Kashchid Dukha Bhagbhavet, Asato Ma Sadgamaya, Tamaso Ma Jyotirgamaya, Mrityor Ma Hamritangamaya, Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Om. That's it.